What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you for tuning in, as always. I'm sorry that it's been a minute. Shit happens. First things first, go to patreon.com/kindaneat. Kick in a buck per episode. We would appreciate it. We would be so thankful. If it's your first time listening and you're just checking it out because Mike Eagle is here, our old buddy Mike, stick around. Maybe you'll like the rest of the episodes. Go back, listen to a few old ones. There's another one with Mike that you could go back and listen to. If you are a weekly listener, though, and you still haven't kicked into the Patreon, at this point, you're really just being lazy. I don't know. I don't know what that says about your character. That's something for you to figure out on your own time. Okay, guys, it's been a while since we did one of these, and I've just been busy. I don't have any other excuses than that. Actually, I haven't even been busy. I've just been uninspired. That's it. You guys heard hints of it in the Rio Cragen intro. I just been uninspired. But I don't know. Maybe I think I'm snapping out of it a little bit. What have I been doing? I went camping. I talked about that I was going camping. It ended up just being me and the little dog, Kennedy. We went to the Sequoias, and that was a fun old time. Kind of. I'll tell you, camping by yourself, pretty fucking boring. We didn't have a lot to do. Also, national parks, not dog friendly. I kind of knew that, but didn't know it to the extent. So while we were at the Sequoias, just she and I, we would have to drive out of the national park and into the national forest where dogs are accepted. And at one point, we drove out to the national forest and walked to this lake. It was a 6-mile hike one way uphill. I'll tell you, I was fucking exhausted. That dog is under 20 pounds, and she looked really exhausted, but by the halfway point, I was feeling guilty, like, oh, this is, like, too much work for this little old dog, and really, she, like, stepped up and was dragging me most of the way and was more into it than I was, and then we made it to this lake and had a nice little relaxing lunch up there, just hanging out, and then walking back down. It took an hour and a half or an hour and 40 minutes to walk up this 6 miles, and then on the way down, it was only 45 minutes. It was, like, very fucking fast. We were damn near running down the hill. Anyway, so that said, my girl and I have plans to go to Yosemite at the end of October, which I'm very juiced about because I've never been to Yosemite. So here I am. I've spent my whole adult life trying to, like, become city folk. Now the only thing I fucking care about is going camping and going back to the wilderness, going back to my childhood. It all comes full circle when you're having a midlife crisis. As a youth, we used to camp all the motherfucking time. And I thought, oh, it's just because we live in the woods and we're lower middle class. And so this is what you do for vacation. You go to a lake and you set up a tent. But now I realize, nah, this shit's dope. And it's just fun to go do. Also, as the holidays are starting to approach, my family's all making plans to come down, so everybody's going to be here for Christmas and New Year's, and my brother and I decided to rent a spot in Tahoe, and so we're going to spend New Year's in Tahoe, hoping for some snow, do a little snowboarding, so that is another thing I'm excited about. I'm really trying to get on this experiential travel shit. My girl and I have decided that we really want to get out to Europe, and so we've started saving some funds to do that, hopefully get out to France. Got plans with my boy Avocado. You guys know Avocado. We're going to get out there, try to go see France with him and his lady, do some real couple traveling. Like, I'm really getting on my adult shit, which Mike and I talk about. You know, this conversation that I have with Mike, it's long. And if you're a Mike Eagle fan wanting to learn more about Mike Eagle, probably not the right podcast. But if you're somebody who has been following along the work that he and I have been doing for the last 10 years out of Los Angeles, where within the last few, our paths have splintered and he's gone on to bigger things. But we started out as peers next to each other in the trenches, playing underground shows and doing stuff like that. So if you've known who both of us are for a while, I think you'll find this intriguing because it's really just a catch-up. We don't get to see each other a lot anymore. He's busy, I'm busy, and we're busy doing different stuff. And it gets to a point in your life where you get to a certain age that you don't really see your friends that much unless you're making money with your friends. And we touch on that too. And so it's nice to be able to set up a lifestyle where you're making money with your friends. For a while, I was making money with some of our mutual friends, and eventually we've all gone our different paths. And now, because of that, we get to catch up on podcasts. which we also touch on. So at times this conversation is intense and I kind of get comfortable and do some talking more about me than at him at times, because he's just as good of a conversationalist and interviewer as I am, if not better. So yeah, I would say parts of this are very revealing. And it was a good time. I love Mike. I love catching up with Mike. I think what he's created for himself is admirable and extremely respectable. He's got a new record coming out, Brick Body Kids Still Daydream. It is out now if you're listening, so you guys can go stream it or buy it. Who knows? They're both great. Streaming and buying, they're both fantastic at this point. And he's also on tour right now, so Google and look for his tour dates. Maybe he's hitting your city. Other than that, I'm just going to get into it because it's a long one. So without further ado, this is my conversation with Mike Eagle on Kinda Neat. What to touch on? There's so much to touch on.
Yeah, just touch wherever you want, Lee. It's fine. just touch away.
Oh, don't threaten me with a good time.
That might be my favorite phrase. Don't threaten me with a good
my
time.
My whole goal in life, beyond like experiential shit, is just to like be that old guy that has a clever response to everything. Yeah. That walks into a diner and talks to a waitress and has like the most clever like retort to everything they say. Like, oh, I love God. Those old men.
That reminds me of this awful thing that happened to me once. I was in some.
Does it involve touching as well?
No, but that was implied. There was this terrible Waffle House I was at in Arizona. Like, it was outside of Phoenix. And, of course, every wonderful story starts this way. But I'm in there and I'm sitting at the counter because all the tables are taken. I'm sitting next to this really huge, like, trucker dude. It's kind of gross. He's, like, consistently trying to flirt with, like, this the best looking waitress there.
Right.
Which
a Waffle House still, nine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he's, like, at her, right? He's just at her. And that's what reminded me of him when you just saying, you know, walking a wait a diner or whatever. But at some point, because me and him aren't paying attention to each other at all, I'm like reading a book or something and really trying not to pay any attention to this dude. And at one point, he just starts laughing. He starts like really chuckling and chuckling to the point where I could tell he's trying to like get my attention laughing. And I had just grabbed the sugar that was between us to put in my coffee. Mm-hmm. And he turns to me and he goes, "I don't usually share my sugar with a black man."
Whoa.
Stretches her out.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. How did you react to that?
I just looked at him incredulously, and I think I know I tried to leave as soon as I could, but I didn't have much conversation with him after that.
That is wow.
It's America, man.
That is America.
America.
You know, it's funny because, like, as a white guy, my instinct is to go, wow, that's so horrendous and mind-blowing that that happens. But that happens all the time.
But it is horrendous. Mm-hmm. It is mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. And it also happens.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's the thing, because in my mind, I want like alarms to go off. Like I want the police to run in and beat him to death. Like just for making me feel that way.
Or just have like you know those like theft ink bombs. Like when somebody tries to steal something and then the ink bomb explodes. Like something. Oh, you said something.
Yes,
just in the face.
Oh my God.
Wow, that's crazy. That's a crazy story. That's not the type of old guy I want
to
be.
No, I figured you're not on that pathway, Lee. Yeah. You'd have to have a sharp life. Life-altering incident for you to end up being that guy.
I don't want to be. I don't want to. That's like an example of a catchphrase that guy's used before, but not the type that I want to use.
He was so excited.
Wow.
So excited to
hear. Yeah, needed to get your attention for it.
Why? Mm-mm-mm. Why, Lee?
When's the last time I saw you?
I don't know.
I think it was your birthday party, maybe. Two years ago or a year ago.
Was it at my house?
Or
was it?
Yeah.
I feel like you've been to New Negroes maybe since
then. Oh, yeah. I saw you at New Negroes, which was great. Which was great.
That was super fun.
Let's jump right into that. Your show got picked up.
Yeah.
Now you're a TV star as well.
I'm a potential TV star.
Right.
Now the show is
bought
and paid for.
Yeah.
But we're in pre-production.
What does that mean?
Right now, we're staffing, hiring for the show. Like, we're just we just got through hiring a we have an offer out to a showrunner, and then they're going to hire line producers, and we're going to staff up, and then we're supposed to shoot in November.
Do you already know – I mean, have you just had to kind of learn by osmosis all these TV terms like showrunner and line producer and all that?
So many questions. Yeah. Like, I ask so – because I need to understand things. So I'll go fuck crazy. Like, and that's even how the music business has been for me. I remember, you know, back in the MySpace days, man, I used to have all these – terrible assumptions about how things worked. And so I used to have all these feelings that were terrible and dumb about like other people's success and getting on the front page of MySpace and, you know, just everything that I thought I had no basis for any thoughts. And I've learned that like I have to know how things work or else I'll just be up at night sweating, you know? So like I ask all the questions, everything.
What have you learned about the TV show stuff?
I mean, I feel like I've learned so much, man.
What is a line producer? I want to know. I don't even know what that is.
The showrunner is like a liaison between the creatives on the show and the network.
And is that different than an executive producer?
Yeah, because I'm an executive producer.
Oh, okay.
There's four of us, I believe. And being an executive producer, there's four of us who like – you know, developed the pitch and sold the show and are attached as executive producers. So we're like, you know, we're like ultimate creative bosses for the show. Like the showrunner technically works for us, but it's his job to communicate between like the label and us and to like oversee the production of the show as a whole.
Okay. Okay.
Like the actual physical production.
Well, let's talk about New Negroes. Like, how did you and Baron meet? Like how
we met doing this,
doing podcasts.
Well, actually, no, we met
doing Secret Skin.
Well, that was how we got cool. We got cool podcasting, but we met doing a comedian rap battle.
Right. Okay.
Called at the time it was called the Beatdown. It's called Turnt now. Yeah, and I used to get in those because I know comics and, you know, they can be fun. I would lose all the time.
On purpose?
No, I just would take them too seriously.
Oh, like to comics or to rappers? Who do you lose to?
Comics.
Wow. Are they good?
Some of them. But the thing is, it's not really about being good.
It's not about, like, staying on beat. It's about, like, the funniest joke.
It's about commitment to the bit because typically you're encouraged to create a character and be that character.
Okay.
And so – it's not necessarily a display of rap skills. It's a display of commitment and an exposure of what's really in your heart.
Okay.
And people kind of respond to that.
Yeah.
And so what was in my heart was not wanting to be embarrassed in a rap situation.
Right.
And so I went way overboard and people didn't like that.
Right.
So I lost all the time.
You're the guy playing like a pickup game and trying to fucking like cross everyone over and take it too serious.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. So you guys met that way. And
He won that one.
Okay. Oh, and so you guys battled each other and he beat you.
Yeah, I don't know if we battled each other, but he won that battle.
Oh, he won that battle.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how podcasting and like when you're in this kind of like weird world that we exist in where you're constantly trying to pitch yourself as a creative to people, like podcasting becomes this means to actually get to know somebody even though you're putting it on display for other people.
And it's really interesting because I, you know, my first run of my podcast, it's been over a year, I feel like, since it ended. I had like 55 episodes and some of my earliest episodes of people like Kamau Bell, who else? Well, Kamau Bell is a good example because Kamau Bell just won an Emmy this week.
Right.
And
for his CNN show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had this moment where like – because me and Kamau have like – you know, we hung out and had that conversation. We've hung out a couple times after that. Like we really broed down a couple times. But I haven't seen him in about a year.
Right.
And you have that moment where you're like, is this guy still my friend? Like we talked for a couple hours on a podcast, but that was like 3 years ago.
Right.
Like, are we still buds?
That's the weird thing about this thing that we do, because there are a lot of people that come in here and we have conversations where we get choked up sometimes and then I never see them again.
Right. I think that is the psychological hazard to podcasting that needs to be talked about more, because I remember when I went on Marin's show for the first time, like – I felt like that guy was my buddy.
Right.
You know, but I had to really check myself. Like, no, this dude, he does this. He does this twice a day. He had just talked to the lead singer of Tool that morning.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I'm feeling his connection when I'm thinking to myself, like, this dude, this is what he does.
Well, and the funny thing is, listening to that episode, he was nervous talking to you, I felt like.
Yeah, because, you know, he didn't want to...
He didn't want to mess anything up.
Well, for men of that age and that, you know, political orientation,
right.
The last thing they want to do is say something insensitive culturally.
Totally.
And speaking to a rapper, everything they say is an opportunity to take a misstep.
Totally, totally.
Yeah.
I will say, like, even having known you now for, like, probably a decade at least.
Yes.
Like... Yeah, we probably met in like 05, 06, I think.
05, definitely.
Yeah, so like over a decade.
Yeah.
It gets to a point where your scene that you came up with or your people that you came up with, everybody starts to splinter and go their own way. Because we're all adults. We're in our mid-30s. Like, we're all pursuing our own shit now. And it's like we've established our identities well enough to where like the scene environment is no longer useful, you know. But then it gets to a point where like – I start personally getting in my own head so much about like, oh man, I don't want to like bug this guy and think that I'm like reaching out just to like utilize this, that, or the other. I don't like, and so then in turn it becomes this thing where I only get to see my friends now when they're pushing a record. You know what I mean? Like, we live four blocks away from each other, but I just am like, well, Mike's a busy guy and I'm not going to like bug him over some shit because like people, I always just assume that people like want something from each other, and that's probably just me projecting.
Well,
yeah,
I think you should come through and hang out.
I would like to do that more frequently.
Because I'm typically, when I'm at home, like after Asa gets out of school, we're just at home. Or like if he's really, 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 really huge into playing basketball right now, we'll go to the park. You know what I mean? Like, come kick it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
well, it's a funny thing because that's what social media has done too, because I watch you and Tiffany and Asa online and read the stories, and I feel like – that's another thing. It's like, oh, I feel like I'm so involved with watching you guys' family that like I feel creepy reaching out like – hey, man, I know all this stuff that you guys have written about your kid. I want to come, like, meet him. He sounds really tight.
Yeah, you never met him?
No, I've met him a few times. I've met him a few times. I've met him a few times, but I'm just saying, like, this whole social media and the podcasting is a reflection of it, like, watching your friends do themselves, because what you do is really just, like, you're selling a real human. That's what your music is. Like, you're not putting on some front. Like, you're selling yourself as a human. So, like, I'm watching this human that I know in person, but then in turn watching people react to your humanity and it really catching on becomes like, oh, I'm like just another part of this crowd watching. I don't deserve to like hit him up now or something.
This is the thing, man. Yeah. Like, what I've found is that I need to be around humans like more than ever, you know? And I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier about things splintering off. And I felt that really viscerally because I've been a part of like different crews and stuff. And like, and then you have like this real touchstone of like, man, I used to see that dude every day.
Right.
You know what I mean? Now, you know, I rarely do. And what I miss out of all of that is just having people around me who I have like history with.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
And I don't know, like I think I need friends now, like more than ever. Like friends, like people you don't have to retell your whole story to, people who already know.
No, and understand the angle. Like, we led a strange life in our 20s that a lot of people can't relate to, I don't think.
Exactly.
And
I play in a volleyball league. I play co-ed casual volleyball league.
Yeah.
And
do you wear the booty shorts?
I would, but I don't. I wear knee pads.
Nice.
These are awesome people, but they're all like professionals. Like, they work jobs, and like, you know, we'll go get a drink after the game, and you know, people will start talking about their day, and I'm like, oh,
can't relate.
It's not that I can't relate. It's just that like when I start talking about mine, then I feel like, am I like bragging? Like, am I like, you know what I mean? Am I like, because I don't, you know, and there's all sorts of mutual respect there, like with all of us, and we're all genuinely cool. But it's like, man, I really love it when I'm around musicians or around creatives or around like stand-up comics, just like people who kind of have an idea and everybody's participating in the world in their own different way of that. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a little bit more of a common ground. Mm-hmm. It's really awesome, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it's sad. This is probably the same conversation that we had last time you were on the show, but it's sad that like everybody splintered off and like I don't get to see those people I have that shared history with that much anymore. But also part of it is just because like these own interpersonal relationships, some of them splinter harder individually.
Absolutely.
And then you don't know where you stand with other people because of those certain relationships. And so my instinct is just to like go more internal and like never leave the crib unless forced.
I'm always like – I'm like a fucking I don't know what it is about my personality style, but like I just try to – I'm pretty cool with everybody. I don't know what that means. Like that means – that must, something – that must mean – that like some like I'm not vulnerable enough in some sense, because there's no way I could actually be cool with everybody.
Yeah.
But I do feel cool with everybody. Like, but what ends up leading to my isolation is first of all just kind of having a family, and so when I'm home, I just kind of want to be at home.
Right.
And then during the day while I'm like moving and grooving and doing things, like I would love to be around people doing that. It's just that, like,
you're a lot more mobile when you're by yourself.
Well, yeah, and I usually need to be working with somebody in some sense to have
right.
that.
Right,
you know? Like, right now I'm doing, like, a bunch of video stuff with my guy Dave, who, like, he's basically out here to work with me.
Right.
And we have history, and we're friends. So it's, like, perfect because, like, if I'm hanging out with him, I'm not wasted time.
Right.
Like, we're doing stuff. We're working, but we're also laughing and being friends. You know what I mean?
And that's a certain thing that people that aren't in a creative industry where you're an independent worker – I mean, basically, as an indie rapper, you're an independent contractor.
Yes.
Like, everything is a gig.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to kind of develop this lifestyle around – your socialization is also work.
Right.
Like, yeah, I'm going to hang out with people that I like, but it's because we're both going to be creating something.
How capitalist is that?
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like,
so people
capitalism.
Talk about, like, you don't have a job, but it's like, nah, I'm literally working 24 hours a day.
Yo,
like,
to the point where national holidays, they make me sick.
Right.
They make, like, I get so upset.
You're telling me you're not going to respond to my email today?
Exactly.
Because you work in an office and I don't?
Exactly that. Like, and I'm like, I need an answer now. And you're like, I'm on vacation. I'm like, what the fuck is a vacation?
Right,
like,
right.
What is that?
It's that whole thing where people can tend to look at it like, your life, every day is a Saturday. And when you look at it, it's like, every day is Monday.
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day is Monday. I love Mondays.
Yeah.
Because I get answers on Mondays.
Totally.
You know?
Right.
I love it's like Christmas every Monday.
Right, right. That's tight. We got way off track, but I'm still curious about Baron. And honestly, I'm even more curious about just – your envelopment into the comedy
so
world
stealthy,
in general.
So stealthy. I just...
You snuck in the back door and like you're like the official comedian.
I'm a burglar, favorite. G. I'm
yeah.
a burglar.
So tell me about your path in the last few years of how you've become so, just involved in the comedy scene.
I mean, I think that it starts with having a friendship with Hannibal.
Yeah.
Going way back. I think that's where it starts, because like some of the first gigs I did where I was rapping on a comedy show was like when Hannibal was hosting comedy at the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn. So if I'd be out there, if he was doing his show, I'd come do songs on that. A big thing out here for me in taking steps to that path was doing stuff at UCB, like doing ASCAT.
Oh, you did ASCAT? Did you take UCB classes?
No.
Okay.
You know, ASCAT.
You're the guy that comes out and does the story.
The monologist,
okay,
but sometimes they have what's called a musical monologist. And I did that twice. And that was huge because, like, especially at that time, the stuff I was writing, the audience ate it all up. The performers enjoyed it and enjoyed performing off of it. And I started having relationships with them, the performers. So you would do ASCAT, and then Matt Besser would be like, oh, I'm doing this other show. Come be the musical guest on it. Because they love to have musical guests. Like they – I think there's some self-esteem thing in comics where they feel like music is just so much cooler than what they do.
Right.
Yeah. So they always love to have a musician on.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because like from the outside looking in, watching your relationship with comedy, I'm like, yo, these guys – feel so much cooler having Mike around.
They do.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you can feel it, which makes, like, what you're doing for them so fucking valuable.
But, you know, me,
yeah,
I always have the imposter syndrome thing in my head.
Right. Like, do I deserve to be here?
Yeah. Like, when are they going to kick me out?
Right.
Like, when are they going to find out I don't belong here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the thing that's constantly in my head.
Right.
Dude, I'm on the fucking Ted Leo album.
Who's that? I don't
Ted Leo and the Pharmacist. It's like one of, like, he's an indie rock music god. And, like, I'm in some studio singing backgrounds next to Paul F. Tompkins on one side.
Wow.
Ted Leo's there. Amy Mann is there.
Wow.
And there's this lady, Toni Newsome, who's an incredible singer and actress. And, like, we're the background singers for this song he's got. And I'm like, trying to harmonize with these people, and I'm in my head like, what am I doing?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But that's,
I mean, Paul F. Tompkins is another big one. When I started seeing you do shows with him at the Largo, I went to one of them and I was just like, oh, because we went on tour together in 2010, and what did we do in the car the whole time? Listen to comedy albums.
Exactly.
Like, I'm a comedy fanatic like you are. I just never, like, I don't feel funny enough or like deserving enough to even. Our outlooks on, like, cold emailing people are just, like, probably polar opposite, because, like, I get so in my head and scared. Yeah. Like, I feel like I would – I just don't deserve to reach out to somebody.
I mean, honestly, like, I've – Paul F. Tompkins, for instance.
Yeah.
When the second time I did the UCB thing and I was a monologist, I made sure I had a guy there to video record.
So you could send it to people.
And – like, one of my targets was Paul. Like, because I saw that he had, like, his show was always super variety. And I'm like, I wonder. Like, I think he'd probably be cool to have it. So I just reached out to him over Twitter. Ever had a rapper on the show. And I think I asked him, like, twice. And then he finally, like, answered back one day and told me to send him something. And I sent him that. And he wasn't into it at first. But then, like, I don't – like, something happened where – and we ended up – sitting down for lunch, and I was like nervous. She like, like imposter syndrome, full blown. Like, why is this man having lunch with me?
Right,
like, you know. But yeah, that was me. Like, that was probably the only like actual planned step in this whole thing. Was like, get videos, show Paul Tompkins.
You know what's funny? You know what I mean? That there's a parallel to be drawn to a rapper that I know you love. He just did the artwork for your t-shirt.
Paul Barman. Uh-huh.
Because Paul Barman, I opened for Paul Barman like 10, 12 years ago, maybe 13 years ago, and talked to him about like, how did you get hooked up with Prince Paul?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I just knew Prince Paul would like my shit. And he's like, when I made this, I sent one copy to Prince Paul and one copy to Steve Martin, knowing that one of them would bite and then Prince Paul bit.
That's amazing.
That's a lot of Pauls, though. Paul F. Tompkins, Paul.
And I'm Paul doing Barman. Some stuff with Prince Paul now, too.
I saw that.
Yeah, man. That's like full on.
That's got to be the dream.
It is.
I mean,
it De La Soul is.
De La Soul is like obviously a huge influence and important in your life, I would imagine.
Yeah. And even just all of his side, every little
diggers,
weird thing.
Prince Among Thieves.
Yeah, exactly. Psychoanalysis, all of that. Like, is his, like, I am one of his brain children.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's just like, you know.
I want to talk more about that, but let's continue down the comedy path.
Yeah.
So would you say, if getting it to Tompkins was one of your ultimate goals, is that one of the things that opened up the most doors then?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it opened up doors. I didn't even know it opened. Like, I ended up having Wyatt Cenac in a video in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who produced the video just, like, knew him and happened to hit him up to see if he would make the cameo. And he was like, yeah, do it. I love my stuff. I'm like, what?
Wow.
And it was because he had saw some stuff at Largo.
No shit.
I didn't even know.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like that kind of thing. I had no idea at the time. Like I was, you know, I was doing shows with Paul, with like James Adomian and Donald Glover and stuff, like way before anything. So it's
that's
like,
right. The one that I went to, I think it was Donald Glover and James Adomian there, right?
That was the first one, I think. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It's funny because coming from an underground rap background like we do, I think in 2005, if we thought about this, it wouldn't make any sense. But in 2017, it makes so much sense just because your music, while not purposefully funny, has good punchlines and good jokes, like genuine, hilarious human observation that are also like gut-wrenchingly sad sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's what the best comedy is too, like turning these terrible things into jokes, but you do it in a genuine way where it's not, you're not like making a fucking Weird Al rap song. You're not doing like you know,
I'm not doing like, it's not comedy rap.
It's not comedy rap, but in turn that makes it so funny sometimes.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
For sure.
Yeah. And so you guys start New Negroes, and how does that idea spawn?
Well, Baron started New Negroes at the Bridgetown Comedy Fest in Portland, I want to say 3, maybe 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Just because he was kind of organizing like the black shows up there as part of this comedy festival and wanted to come up with a way to like package the new faces that he had come across touring around the country.
Uh-huh.
And he started it there, and it was super successful. And I don't remember exactly what the circumstances were of him reaching out to me about it, but he said, "Would you want to do it with me?" And I'm like, "Hell yeah." I think the first time we did it together, I think, actually was in Bridgetown, and then we started doing it down here in L.A. as a monthly.
Uh-huh.
And we've done it in Denver. We've done it in New York. We've done it in San Francisco.
Now, the one that I saw, it was around Christmas time, so it was themed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Kwanzaa one,
which was hilarious.
Yeah, that was like one of our best ones.
Well, I'm glad that I caught that one. Fantastic, that's serendipitous. But it was hilarious, and it was kind of themed. And Baron, this is my takeaway from the show. Like, tell me if I'm getting the format correct or incorrect. But you're the music.
Right.
Producer, the music curator, how about? And he comes out and hosts, and his hosting segments are sort of themed, and then you guys have stand-ups come out in between, right?
Yeah, except that typically the theme isn't such a strong through line throughout the night as it was that night. Yeah,
because
we had like – we had so much to talk about with Kwanzaa that we kind of broke it up into chunks.
I didn't know any of that stuff about Kwanzaa.
Yeah,
it was very interesting.
Yeah, it was a lot to dive into.
Yeah.
And because I knew some stuff about Kwanzaa because I knew, stuff about the founder because I took a lot of like Black American Studies classes in college. And I was blowing Baron's mind with some of that stuff, And that's the thing. You just never realize what could be unpacked. But that's kind of what the whole show is about, is unpacking things.
Right. So if that one was an unusual one, what's the show usually like then? Is it just Baron testing bits as he hosts?
Well, not necessarily, because we tend to talk about things in the opening, but they're usually more like what's going on in the world right now.
Okay.
Things, and not so much like here's a presentation like that one was.
Yeah.
And then, throughout the night, then, he's more hosting and being a comic.
Yeah,
you know what
right.
I mean? But in that first part, our banter is usually rooted in some theme.
Right. Yeah. And what's your involvement in preparing for the show? Do you guys meet up beforehand and kind of talk about what the night's going to be like?
Yeah, we text and, and all of that. Like, keep a always open line of communication, because between a live show and then building this TV show, like, me and Baron are talking like almost
all
daily.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Has the production of a television show been gratifying? Like, are you enjoying it?
No. No. We are in a very interesting position. We're a black show called The New Negroes. We're on a pretty white network.
It's a network that's striving for diversity, but I feel like often doesn't know what to do with diversity.
And we have a black exec.
Yeah.
A black network exec, which is incredible.
Yeah.
We're partnered with Funny or Die as a production company, which is not a black company.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always having to walk this line between what is the best practical idea and what is the idea that feels the best, because feel is important, because if this doesn't go right, then me and Baron are going to get our asses chewed out by Black Twitter.
Mm.
And like, that is a constant haunting thought, like, on my shoulder at all times. Like, this shit has to feel right. Like, I know we have to have all our I's dotted and our T's crossed on all the things that Comedy Central ever worries about in terms of production and reach and demo and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, the show is called The New Negroes, and me and Baron have to make sure that things feel right to us in a way that's not always easily translatable.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So we end up in these weird conversations all the time. We're trying to explain, like, what – why something's important, but we're also not trying to force the issue because we don't want to be wrong either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we want to make sure that this works smoothly for everybody, and we don't know how to make a television show. We've never done this either.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not fun. It's a unique challenge. It's an awesome opportunity, but it's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet.
Do you think it'll become fun?
It certainly has the potential to become fun.
Yeah. I mean, has it been a challenge that you appreciate, though? Like, I'm saying, like, what are you getting out of it if not that?
I do think it's the challenge that I appreciate because I want to know how to do this.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I need to know how things work, right? So, like, if I can figure out how to do this to where, like, because ultimately, right, let's say you really want to make a rap album, which you never have.
Uh-huh.
And it is Lee's rap album. Uh-huh. Lee's going to be the face of it. So if it ain't right, Lee's going to get it.
Right.
But you might not know the ins and outs of the studio or the production, the boards, whatever. Right. And you might have a thing that you feel like, man, I should have more delay on this part of the thing. And your engineer could be like, no, that doesn't sound good. And the engineer's got all the experience,
mm-hmm.
but it's your thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you also want to respect his experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But it, so it's like, but if you...
It's like picking your battles.
Yeah. But if as you make albums more, then you know when to fight that battle. You know what hill to die on. See, right now I don't know what hill to die on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always like, I want to fight you right now, but I'm not gonna.
Right.
Or I am, and I don't know if I should.
Right.
I have a lot of conversations where I have to tell people that I'm having an internal fight about what we're talking about right now.
Like a lot of meta conversations.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How... You're so fucking busy all the time, I think, or at least that's what you present to the world, and I'm sure that's pretty accurate.
It is. So, but I also play a lot of video games, so that's you okay. know, that's the balance.
Right.
I am hella busy, but right. I find lots of hours of the
Free
day
time.
To play video games.
Okay. I'm gonna talk to you off air about what video games you're playing because
I'm
curious.
Let's talk on it.
Wait, but I have a guided question. Like,
sure.
How are you balancing and dividing your time between what you always have been or, you know, what you've always been working on, which is the rap music, with all of these other roles that you're becoming and growing into?
Because everything else that I'm doing ultimately has rap music involved in it one way or another.
Right.
So it's not even that much of a departure.
Well, so I guess what my question was is, like, how the fuck did you find time to write another album, basically?
How did I find time to write another album? I think... Yeah, it's not even, you know, I have my take the kid to school at 9:00. He gets picked up at 3:30. I have my day.
Yeah.
Right. And this year has not been me. Like, I wrote a script for a scripted show. That's like, it's a whole other deal in the works for that thing.
Nice.
But aside from that and like pitching and developing the pitch and stuff for the uh-huh. Negroes. I mean, my time has still been pretty much just make music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it hasn't, nothing else has really come through and consumed. And in fact, it lightened up some because my podcast is on hiatus.
Right.
So I actually had more time.
But you picked up another podcast too.
I'm going to be like on 3.
There you go. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you do the wrestling podcast.
Yeah.
And what are the other ones?
Secret Skin's coming back.
Nice.
And, there's this other one I'm talking to mid-roll about, and there's this other one.
So that might be 4?
I think it might be 4.
That's a lot of work.
That's insane.
That's
really crazy.
But you did take a little break from making music, it seemed like, or at least relative to your terms, no?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I put out an album last year.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Wait, which one?
Hella Personal Film Festival.
That's right. Okay, never mind. yeah, people talk about it as though you haven't put out a record because you haven't put out a quote-unquote solo record.
But yeah.
When you work with just one producer, that's still
a record. But I'm really glad that I chose to – or that it turned out that we did that as like a co-build album.
Mm.
Because it is different than a solo album in terms of the ownership of the details of it. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. And like – the decisions that get made in terms of the final product. And I tend to enjoy making records more on my own. Like, I love the cohesion of sound when you work with one producer. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But I love even more, I think, the ownership of details and being able to make exactly what I want and not having to, like, negotiate with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, I do think those projects are a little different.
Was that your first time working strictly with one producer?
No. My Animal Hospital album I did with one guy, too.
Okay.
I did that with Awkward.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm very used to just balancing another person's work ethic with mine. And sometimes there's a lot of waiting involved.
You're a good collaborator. See, I'm not a good collaborator.
Oh, I'm the worst collaborator.
No, you're not the worst, because the worst collaborator is me, because I don't even – like, I won't do it anymore, I don't think.
Really?
I don't think I'm ever going to do that again. I really don't.
Like, you're just going to make your own beats now?
No, I mean, I'm never going to work with one producer.
Well, but then you're collaborating with 12 people, 13 people.
That's not really collaborating. It's more like, hey, give me that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do something to it. I might let you hear it later. You know what I mean? Like, it's very much – and the producers who I work with, they don't always enjoy this process.
Yeah.
Like, surprise, here's that song I did over your album. I'm over your song. It's now on my album. You know what I mean? Like, it's not – the best way to work with people. It's just the way that I prefer to work with people.
As your name continues to grow and the records get more and more recognition as you continue to make them, when you're working with multiple people like that, does the business end of it get more confusing? Because that's one thing I've never really learned or figured out. And does Mello just handle that for you?
Well, my management handles all of that.
Mm-hmm.
All that shit scares me, man.
Right.
Like, 'cause you got to get all of these things in a row. And typically you got to figure out the splits for you and the
That's
producer
what I'm saying,
and this and that and the publishing and the master and all that.
Yeah.
And like, honestly, typically, like, my shit's not licensed much. I've licensed like 3 songs in my whole career.
Right.
And other than that, there's not really any money made. So I really hate that part. I really hate like –
Well, with the streaming now, though, like, I'm sure your shit's doing good on Spotify.
Yeah, but I don't see – look.
Yeah.
My biggest songs are like 3 million plays on Spotify. I don't know how much. It's like, what, $28 or something? I don't know what that is. And you know, ultimately, I push my label to spend as much money as they can marketing the thing.
Yeah.
So I'm never – like, I got some cool royalties off of the EP I put out. Special episode right after Dark Comedy.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's the one with the biggest song on Spotify. That one's on that one.
What's that song?
Zeke Starfish.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And like, oh, I was like, oh my God, like this project recouped and is making money. But that's such an aberration in my career. Like, typically, I'm always just kind of riding the line to breaking even, you know?
With the goal of like touring and making the money there or what?
Or you know, I look at it mostly like cultural capital, though, honestly. Like
your Twitter right now, basically?
Yeah, and like, you know, like increasing awareness and
I mean your Twitter in the sense that like you got a bunch of people that follow and then you're eventually going to figure out how to monetize them. You know
not,
what I'm saying?
Kinda, but it's not necessarily directly about monetizing. It's more like brand recognition, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if I can make this album feel like an event, to me, that is way more successful than like selling a bunch of copies of it. I know the label might not agree because they're the ones investing all that money and they want to get their money back. But
Getty and I always talk about that, about making albums try to feel like an event.
Yeah.
Because I've only put out like really 2 actual records.
So every one of yours
of them,
is for sure.
They always feel like an event.
Exactly.
Hey, Getty puts out like hundreds of records
he does.
He's like, I don't know how to make them like an event. And I'm like, just space them out. Like,
yeah. I mean, it's tough too because he's not a guy who wants to avail himself.
He does. Yeah. I mean,
to the masses in the way that like, I, you know.
He's one of the most pure artists.
He is.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
He
like,
is.
He just, the art is a sickness in him almost. Mm-hmm. Like he can't help but do it.
And do it like in this amazing space where you would think that the artistry itself would do some of that heavy lifting, right, marketing, but that's like, unfortunately, our reality doesn't ever really seem to catch up to that.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. You just kind of brushed by the fact that you wrote a scripted comedy too.
Yeah.
So is that
me and a guy? I have a writing partner. We wrote a script.
Wow, you're like really out here doing like
I am
you're
not
growing.
Playing no
you're
games, dude. I'm trying to get this money. Do you know how much money? You know how much money this Hollywood shit? Like, do you
I
know?
Don't.
These motherfuckers piss away money. Dude.
Really?
They piss away.
So how does that work?
Money.
Do you get like an agent or something too?
I got an agent. Yeah. But see, I stumbled into having a damn agent.
Yeah.
Because my booking agency is Windish.
Yeah.
Windish kind of got acquired or bought or merged with Paradigm,
which
is a talent agency.
Yeah.
And so, like, I happened to be one of the Windish artists that also had some things in the work in TV film.
Uh-huh.
And
so they're like, you need an agent.
They just matched me with an agent.
Yeah.
You know?
And so your agent is just like, yo, can you write a TV script or what? Or were you already working on that?
What happened was, there's a production company that reached out to me over Twitter because they assumed from my tweets that I had something to sell in that realm. And so they brought me in for a meeting, and I hadn't had one of these yet. Now I've had a million of these, so
yeah,
I kind of get like
generals,
what it's about.
Generals,
yeah, I had never had one. So I was like, I don't know what this is.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically just seeing if I had any ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple ideas, like just stuff that you would think about. You're like, oh, that'd be funny, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I reached out to this guy I know who's a writer. He's a TV writer. And we developed one of the ideas and showed it to this production company. Like, oh, this is interesting. I think we can work this out. And so we developed a pitch and we started taking it around different networks to see who was interested. And it got bought and we were paid to do the script, paid to revise the script. They had it in their development, whatever. And then they passed on it.
So that means it didn't make it to like pilot season or
what? Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Because that's the next step after getting bought and pitched is then pilot. And then if the pilot goes good, then it gets picked up.
Yeah.
All right.
And
but even to have sold it is a big step.
Yeah. And somebody else just bought it from them.
Oh, nice. So this,
I'm going to get paid all over again.
That's tight.
For the same damn script. That's so what I mean.
They're
like,
pissing out money.
I can't get into details of numbers, but what they gave us to write that script, I'll never sell that many albums in my life.
Huh.
I'll never sell that many albums.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, it's just a different economy, man.
Mm-hmm.
And like the money that they offered us to make that script, like my lawyer wanted us to walk away from the deal because he thought it was too low.
Wow.
And I'm like, who the fuck do you think I am?
Yeah,
like,
do you think,
do you know what I do?
Right.
Do you know how much shucking and jiving I would have to do for this money in my music life? Are you kidding me?
Right. And then you got to double up on it.
Yeah, man.
For no extra work.
I mean, it's probably going to be some extra work. I mean, and it's always a headache, G, because like these networks, they don't communicate like with each other directly. Like the people who I talk to, they're business development departments communicate with the other companies' business development departments.
Mm-hmm.
That shit takes fucking forever.
Mm.
And like, it'll kill you. The anxiety will kill you. Like, you'll get good news in February and nothing will happen till like June.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of just like hurry up and wait.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
A lot of like, and you know, like the story of the New Negroes getting sold is crazy, man. We almost lost that deal like twice, you know.
Was it always just with Comedy Central or were other people looking at it too?
Yeah, there were other buyers too.
Yeah.
That's where it was harrowing at some points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Is the New Negroes TV show still going to be like a stand-up showcase thing?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you and Jonathan both ended up on Adventure Time.
Yeah, on the same episode.
How did
and
that
peep
happen?
This, dude.
Yeah.
They didn't know we knew each other.
Wow. That's weird.
That's crazy.
See, I honestly, in my heart of hearts, looking from the outside in, was like, oh, one of them knew somebody and then said, oh, I have a friend who also would be interested in this. Because you guys have known each other for so fucking long.
Do you know, dude, my Adventure Time angling.
You had a podcast about Adventure Time.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, and we, you know, we built relationships with the creators of the show from that, you know. So they knew about me and knew that I was so down anytime to do something with them. We had talked about that. I had talked about that with the showrunner of way before even the podcast had started.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah, I was angling. I was like, that was peak angling year for me. Like, that was when Marin and all of that, like, I was just,
A cold emailing
monster, man. Like,
and
that
they
year.
Bid on that.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was, but I think something happened where I made some mention of Adventure Time and
somebody tweeted somebody like, yo, look at this Adventure Time reference.
And the guy like followed me and I'm like, okay,
this is the end.
I'm writing this cold DM.
Oh, you know what I mean? Absolutely. Like, as soon as somebody with that check mark follows, you gotta just see like, why are you following me? I mean, what are we doing?
But I've done that so many times and gotten no response.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, and that's the part that blows my mind. It's like, why did you do this?
Right,
why did you press this button? Like, what is this?
You know?
I don't, you know, like there's.
So he's one that you nibbled and he pulled the hook.
Yeah.
So what happened with that? You guys just kept in contact?
Yeah. And I pitched him. Is pitch a word? I guess pitch. Not quite pitch. I don't know. We kept in contact. Mm-hmm. He was really we're talking about the Adventure Time showrunner.
Yeah.
He was really instrumental in making the Adventure Time podcast as official as it was. Because once. I told him we were coming from a pretty reputable network. We're coming from, American Public Media, and it's going to be a legit thing. And we reached out to see if they wanted to be involved. Like, he ran it right up the pipeline to Cartoon Network, and they were like, yes.
Wow.
And so we were able to talk to so many of the voice actors, so many of the producers, so many of the animators, directors. Like, it really – that was huge, having him.
That was
on
the
board.
Adventure Time podcast.
Yeah, like, it basically, you know.
Yeah.
So that was huge. I knew about – they knew about me from that. And I guess, you know, once it got put up that they were going to have another rap episode, he reached out to me. And I didn't find out until I think – I want to say like the week before. They were like, yeah, these are going to be other people. I'm like, what? Dumbfound? Like, what? And like, you guys know it? No. They had no idea.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
That's really funny. Is the episode out?
No, it'll be – it's actually airing Monday.
Yeah, you've done a lot of, like, cartoon voiceovers, no?
I've done...
Or relatively?
Two things. I've done a thing that's just on the web. It's, like, got Hannibal and a couple other people in it. And I've done...
I saw that at your birthday party, and I think. And you know what's funny is when HBO came out with Animals or whatever.
I didn't see that.
It's a Duplass Brothers thing. It's kind of... It's hit or miss. But
okay.
I was like, wait, is this the thing that Mike and Hannibal were in?
Mm.
Because it was kind of similar to that. Like, you got that one that I saw of you, it's like with animals, right?
Yeah. There's like humans and animals. It never gets explained why.
Yeah, that's kind of how Animals is.
Interesting.
But it's more just animals, not as many humans. So the humans are kind of evil in that show.
Huh.
Yeah. Anyhow, so then you did the Adventure Time thing.
Yeah.
Is voiceover something you would want to pursue as well?
Yeah, I like doing voice stuff. I did this other thing with this stop motion thing. I did a voiceover for I can't remember the name of it right now. But I took a lot of like acting classes last year too because I wanted to really try to like do all of it.
That's what I was going to ask.
Acting's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah. I was wondering if you were taking like UCB classes.
I probably should have, and maybe I will.
That's like the boot camp now for comedic actors in Hollywood. They're like, oh, you got an agent? Go take UCB.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Improv would definitely help. Improv would be like a skill set I can use like right now all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to because I kept getting auditions because I have an agent.
Mm.
They would just put me up for stuff and I'd get auditions and I'd never get the role because I don't know how to act for shit. So I was like, let me take some acting classes so I can try to like – but then I realized, oh, acting is really hard.
Really?
It's really difficult.
It's funny because I like in my own just like egotistical mind. I'm like, acting seems easy.
Oh no. Like now I kind of have a little bit of refined eyes where I can look at a television show and tell like who's a good actor
and who's a bad actor.
And good acting, man, like it's difficult.
Right.
Like the level of choices you have to make. Like you really, your first mind wouldn't think about it. You would just see the words on the page and be like, you would say the words. But like the level of choices to like how you say words and like what you're doing with your hands and like, there's just so much forethought that has to go into it, but it has to look completely seamless. It's crazy.
That's funny. You know, what's a good indicator? Or not a good indicator, but it's something that I've noticed now that we live in LA. We see people on TV that we know or have met. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes I'll watch shows with somebody that I have met and had multiple interactions with. And I can tell if they're good or bad at acting on some like after a while do I forget that I know that person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because sometimes I watch people act and I'm just like, oh – there's them and they're on a screen, but that's them. But then if I watch somebody that I've met a few times and eventually I just like the fact that I know who they are is completely out of sight, out of mind. I'm like, oh, they're actually a really good actor. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Cause it's just, it's have they slipped into that persona?
Right.
And you're immersed in the world now rather than like the real life thought of.
Other than like, there's Bobby making a bad choice. Right. You know? Like, there's Bobby making his acting face.
That's funny, dude.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. Like being in this town as long as we have, like you know, you have that feeling all the time. Like you can barely turn on a television show and not see somebody you know or had some like personal experience with. And that's weird, man. Like I feel like I ruined TV for myself like that. Because like I don't know, like. Every time that happens, it, like, pushes my ambition button, too. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm already doing too much. I need to chill out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm grateful that, like, TV accidentally got ruined for me when I was 19. The year that I moved to California, I went to a taping of The Man Show.
Oh, wow.
With Kimmel and
Carolla.
And Carolla. Yeah. And it was one of the worst experiences ever. Like, seeing a live TV show being produced was terrible.
That kind of show, right? Because it's all mostly – it's like a lot of tape segments, but then like the home segments and, that they probably have to keep redoing over and over again.
Right. And you know, you're a 19-year-old douchebag and that's like the douche fucking theme show.
It was. That was the king of the douche
everybody's
show.
Like, yeah, man, they get you drunk. They give you beer. They give you one half full beer while you're there and you're sitting there for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And like it was just – I was like, oh, wow, this is all just like smoke and mirrors. It's not cool at all.
Did I ever tell you about the tape and I went to camp? To Key and Peele,
no,
the first season.
No,
it was so bad. I didn't watch that show for the first two seasons because the taping was horrible.
Really?
And it wasn't that like the sketches were bad or anything. It's just that we're there taping and they're taping like those home segments where they come out and they throw to the clips.
It looks like a stand up show kind of or something.
Apparently, this one woman that was sitting near our section, I guess whoever she was with told her that they were just going to a comedy show. And she was drunk. She was fucking heckling the TV taping. And like not where it was like, oh, this is a bit. No. Like my whole section, we were trying to leave
because
she was ruining it, dude. Like they had to get like the person, the director, producer, whoever was over the PA was like, can the audience please be quiet? Like because this one lady, she would not stop yelling at the stage.
Like just at the screen playing the skits?
No, because they're, you know,
they're
Key and Peele are out there on stage throwing to the skits.
Yeah.
And she's like, nigga, why your pants so tight? Like, you know what I mean? Like really giving it to him. And he's like trying to ignore it.
Yeah.
It's a fucking TV taping. Like, when does that ever happen?
Right.
They wouldn't even let us leave.
Wow. Yeah, that's the thing. That's the other thing is like once you're in, you kind of feel trapped.
Locked in. Locked in.
Like part of me, you know, we live right by where Jeopardy gets taped.
Really?
Is
that a culvert?
It's Sony. Yeah,
okay,
right there. Like, and so I want to like in my heart of hearts, I want to go to a Jeopardy taping because I love Jeopardy. But I don't want Jeopardy to be ruined for me either. Like I want to see Trebek in person because that's the man. But like I don't want Jeopardy to be ruined for me forever like TV was after I saw Manja.
You know, one of the things that's been the thrust of my adulthood is that I've learned my natural inclination is to get so close to things that I ruin them. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I naturally do. Like, every rap act that I love, I get so close to them to ruin it.
Because you just realize that everybody's just a fucking person.
Right. And I get too close. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Ron and Fez. Did we ever talk about Ron and Fez?
I think we briefly talked about Ron and Fez because I think last time you were here, that's kind of what was going on. Made the Ron and Fez thing song, that kind of like became a theme song, right?
Yeah, they used it a few times. Yeah. But that was the thing. We're like, I needed to be a part of that.
Right, because that's what it was. When you were here last, you were talking about how that's the only podcast you listened to was like catching up with Ron and Fez show. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that's interesting.
Now it's all wrestling podcasts.
Yeah.
And I'm about to ruin that for myself, too.
Because you're going to be on all of them.
Yeah, and now we're going to have wrestlers on ours and shit. It's sooner or later, I'm going to fuck this up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen. I'm going to be like, oh.
Getting too close to the sun, man.
That's my thing.
Yeah.
That's my thing, man. Mm-hmm. That's what all that cold emailing is about, ruining shit for me.
You know what's funny? You said something a minute ago that, like, when you see somebody you know on TV, it's like presses that ambition button.
Yeah.
And that's something that just turned off in me recently. Mm-hmm. Like, I came to that realization. I don't know what it is. Like, I think it's because I've just been reading about white male mediocrity so much that I'm like, oh, wait. I'm like, this whole time I thought I was special and I'm just a mediocre white guy. And I'm like, now I don't have big ambitions of being famous anymore. I genuinely did 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, fuck it. Whatever. I'm just like a normal human now.
Wow.
Yeah.
How weird is that? What's that like? Like, what's that like, that transition?
The transition has been strange for me because I am genuinely trying to transition into, like, Lee Shaner. Like, I bought LeeShaner.com. I have a Lee Shaner Instagram that I haven't started yet, but I will eventually. But, like, I'm knowing that, you know, kind of neat. The brand is not working out how I thought it would.
Really?
Nah, of course not.
What was it supposed to do?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I never really knew. I thought I was going to figure it out along the way. I think maybe in the back of my mind, I thought it would become a platform for me to start a really like popping indie label. Maybe that was one of them. Or I thought like maybe I could pitch this as a TV show at some point. But I've not figured out how to do that.
We could talk about that.
I mean, I would love to. Realistically,
you know, that might be.
I always saw
in opposition
this,
to your transition.
No,
you know
I mean, I would still be – I'm somebody that pursues opportunities that arise. Mm-hmm. Same way as you. I just probably don't pursue them with as much veracity as you do. And I'm also not as good at spotting opportunities as you are. You know what I'm saying? Which I definitely look up to you in that sense. But yeah, maybe I saw this going as like a kind of a 120 minutes type thing. Like I always loved Matt Pinfield as a kid. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And my point is – transitioning into like normalcy. It's funny because like what I see myself transitioning into is still something that most people would consider a pipe dream because I'm like, I've been shooting a lot more photos and I've acquired a pretty great portfolio now. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to start like marketing myself as a photographer and probably make more money doing that. And that to some people is like a dream. And that to me is like my backup.
Right.
Which is still kind of funny. So anyway, I don't know what it's like transitioning. It's just... sometimes I find myself looking for jobs.
Wow. Even,
I don't need one, but sometimes I think like I spent so many years of my youth going like I never want to work in this office environment again. I never want to work for somebody again. And now that it's been 7 years since I've worked for anybody, I'm like it would be so nice to just have health insurance
and
a 401k.
Health insurance is real.
Yeah. So anyway.
That's interesting. What kind of job would you work? Like what would you be like happy doing?
I would not be happy doing anything,
I see,
Mike.
Yeah.
I'm never happy.
Yeah.
That's part of the other realization of life
that's,
for me.
Yeah, that's some shit I got doing Secret Scan. I realized that nobody's happy.
Nothing
though.
Makes you happy. And yeah. The thing that I've really been dealing with a lot lately is like everyone has this idea of making it, right?
Right.
And I've come to like I this is not a new revelation, but there is no quote-unquote it because as soon as you get to it,
there's another level.
You realize that it is farther away than you thought, mm-hmm. and that like, okay, now I'm here, and what the fuck do I do now? You gotta keep thinking of more its.
You know, one reason I'm really into like, cause now the only podcasts I listen to are like professional wrestling podcasts, because I love to hear like the thoughts of, you know, established wrestlers that were super famous, like just their thoughts on today's product, just the old stories and all of that. And they're interesting because there is a making it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then like then they have this whole psychological minefield of like how long they can make it mm-hmm. and what the hell they can do after making it, because it's literally a thing you can only do until like your body starts giving out. Like there's a shelf life.
Right. And that's kind of the point too, is like when you think you make it, when you're at it, you're like, fuck, this is so temporary.
Mm-hmm.
It is so temporary.
Right.
And like what comes after it? And so that's why I think like whether consciously or subconsciously that I've started trying to like transition into like thinking, I never thought about the future. I always thought about the now. And now I'm starting to kind of go like, oh, I need to think about the future because like I don't know. Like I guess I never worried about a safety net. Now I'm starting to think about a safety net because I realize like that it as when it's over, no one gives a fuck.
Do you you wanted to be famous 5 years ago?
To an extent, yeah. I always felt like I wanted to be like something.
Do you feel like you at that point, you feel like you had something like to say to everybody like that?
I always felt like I had something to say, but I feel like enough people have told me that I wasn't really saying shit.
Like, well, do you agree with that?
To an extent, I that's the thing when people tell me like, oh, pitch yourself. I don't know. I never had an elevator pitch because I think like I like to think of myself as a very three-dimensional human, and it's hard to like smush that down to a 2D screen.
It takes somebody outside of you to do that. Like, yourself.
And
like,
I never
impossible.
Had anybody willing to like say, oh, this is who you are. Like I was just doing what I do, just doing me. So and that's the whole thing.
I guess the question is, I was wondering if you thought you had something to say and if you think now that you don't have something to say or
– No, that's not it. It's not that – I think everyone has something to say.
Sure, I agree. Everybody does.
I think
– That's kind of part of my thing that I have to say is that everybody's got something to say.
Everybody has something to say, but I think some people have the drive to get out there and say it. And then if that drive goes away, then maybe you don't have anything left to say.
Hmm.
I don't know. So, yeah, I don't know what the fuck I was saying. But I think everything I used to say in my records was very, like, self-centered.
I mean, but what usually rap is. Like, it's hard to get away from that.
Right.
Because if not, then who are you speaking for?
Right. Like, well, and so that's the thing is, like, if you can't find that universality, or if that's even a word, but if you can't find that kind of, like, universal appeal and you're just talking about you to someone who relates to you, that someone's going to be very niche.
Not necessarily. I feel like on paper you would think that, but I feel like within rap, people have found a lot of like populist angles with that, where like they find a way to make their self-exploration so relatable that a whole bunch of other people feel like you're speaking for them too.
Right, absolutely. Oh, and I think that I achieved that to some extent. Absolutely. Like, I you know, and the thing, you know, every time I beat myself up about stuff, I have plenty of people that tell me that I'm being an asshole for beating myself up on Twitter. They're like, people will respond to this and go like, you don't give yourself enough credit. And they're right. I don't. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, you posed a good question. Do I think I thought I had something to say? Sure. And I still think I do, but now I'm not so convinced that I need to say it to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's what my whole thought process about it is like, what if it is just like being satisfied?
Yeah. Satisfaction is the elusive beast in all of this. And I think that's what I was saying when I learned doing Secret Skin, is that nobody I spoke to I felt was satisfied. Nobody.
So are you satisfied?
Never.
Right.
Never.
So that's kind of my point about transitioning, is I think maybe I'm – instead of like allowing myself to feel that ambition button pressed when I see somebody else, because what that is, and from my take – it's ambition to an extent, but it's also admitting like, ooh, I'm jealous of what that person
absolutely.
Has. Right?
Absolutely.
Right. So I think like I'm conscientiously trying to turn that off because I always had that. Yeah. Oh, my God. I had to have you guys – some of my friends I had muted. I had you muted for a while on Twitter because I'm like, damn, Mike is so popping that when I would see these big moves you made, I would get so jealous that it was bitterness.
No, I still have that like – I mean, lesser so now, because I feel like my lane is so like over here,
right?
And I'm doing my own thing, that I'm like, I can finally like not trip,
worry,
you know,
about
what I mean,
other people,
on, other,
yeah,
on other people. But I still have that too.
So
and I would like to try to find a way to work on that too, because I feel like,
right,
that's like a lack of love thing in my heart. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
if I have more love, then like I don't trip on nothing. But that's,
right,
not the case. You know what I mean?
Well, because we're all seeking the sort of validation,
yeah,
that we didn't get as kids, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, me and you have similar abandonment issues.
Yo, God, I have the worst.
Yeah.
I have awful abandonment issues.
You've been going through to a therapist,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You talk about that kind of publicly, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
What have you been learning?
I've been learning like the exact effects of my abandonment issues and like how my childhood survival mechanisms I've like brought into adulthood, and
uh-huh,
my like pretty much every problem in my life is because of that,
right,
because like I at like some part of my decision making is stunted from that particular place,
uh-huh,
and I need to grow up.
But at the same time, that's also that thing that probably causes that drive of wanting to like show people, look how good I am at things, like look at these things that I make and tell me they're good. No?
Yes. I think that where I'm at now, though, is like, I don't so much need the validation of people saying that what I do.
Right. That was a very visceral
good
example. Right?
Yeah. I need, I see very like vivid pictures in my head of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like, I feel like the validation I need at this point is to, like, be recognized by, like, I always joke on Twitter about getting a Peabody Award.
Mm-hmm.
I really want one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really, really want one. I feel like that's the validation I'm seeking, is, like, I want to be lauded as a creative because of these detailed choices that I make about things. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But the other problem, and this might be the real issue, is that I want to be appreciated in the rap conversation, which is such a function of economics,
mm-hmm,
that it's hard for me not to think about that while I'm trying to paint these pictures. And so, like, I feel like in some senses I always end up with this final product that's, like, this distorted picture because the other half of me desperately wants the validation of, like, the rap conversation.
Right.
And you got to have a certain kind of song to do that, and I've never had the resources to really make that kind of song.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still something that I value, and
that's something that there are so many people that you and I have come across in this scene in Los Angeles that feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so I think a part of me has seen people that I look at as such huge successes,
right?
I look at this person and I go, you made it. Like, you made it to it, right? You're there. But you're so fucking unsatisfied that you can't even realize it, and you're not appreciating it because they're still worried about, like, I didn't get talked about in, mm-hmm, the same sentence as fucking,
right,
whoever, insert popping rapper, or,
sure,
even insert quote-unquote artsy rapper.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, absolutely.
Because I've told you a million times before, like you're my guy when it comes to, like, just the art rap shit in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that alt left field rap, like, you're my guy. You know what I'm saying? When people ask, like, oh, you know, about that kind of music, I'm like, you gotta listen to Mike Eagle. And I told you before, like, back when that shit was, like, really hot for a minute with, like, That's Racist and,
yeah,
and Danny Brown and people like that, I'm like, I didn't understand why your name wasn't getting brought up. That said, you're there now.
Yeah.
Like, you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And so to a certain extent, like, me personally, I'm trying to get to that point where I can feel satisfied with accomplishments, which I've never allowed myself to do. And I don't know if that's going to be good for me in a monetary sense, but I feel like I'm going through a lot with my dad dying.
Mm-hmm.
And you just can't take any of it with you.
Right.
You know?
Right. I mean, one the really helpful thing about me doing all this comedy shit is that I'm very aware of the fact that, like, I'm not supposed to be there. And so at every step of the way in that journey, I'm, like, super front of the brain consciously appreciative of it. And I feel like that balances out some of my, like, raging id shit that I experience in other parts of my creative life and trying to sell music and all that. Like, I can have that golem, you know what I mean? Ugh, precious, that shit on one side. But then, like, on this TV shit, I'm like, wow, it is incredible to be here.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, so that's kind of – that's, I guess, what I was trying to get to in a roundabout way is, like, because you didn't get talked about to the extent that you wanted in the rap convo, the fact that you were able to find the back door into a sustainable amount of popularity to create a career out of it, like, that to me, from the outside looking in – is a bigger accomplishment.
It feels great. The only problem is just the numbers, man. That's the, like,
right.
That's the unfortunate thing of it all is, like, I would like to be prouder of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it comes down to it, like, I get a ticket sales report for this tour I'm going on.
Right.
Like, God damn it. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I get
it. For as nice as everything feels, it's like when it comes to feet on the ground, people who will press that button when you're asking to press that button. It is just not a ton of people, like, relative to the entertainment
business.
It's
the niche that I'm talking about. Yeah. We're niche.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, we're niche. And that's fine. But that's my thing is, like, I congratulate you for finding other routes to sustain. You're still able to do the thing that you love, even if it is it's not the thing that you can, like, or it's something where you're going to cities and you're not seeing as many people as you want is what you're saying. Like, you're still getting to do it.
Yeah. I guess get another shot at it.
You're still getting to do it. You're getting to do the thing that you love. Like, we grew up loving rap and you're doing it.
Yeah.
Like, that is great.
It is.
But it's not enough. Why doesn't it feel like enough?
Sometimes it does.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does, man. Cause that's the thing too. Like, my successes have been so incremental.
Right.
So, like, these tiny steps.
But, you know, they've always been up the steps.
Right. But like,
because I've watched and it's always been up the steps. You aren't backfalling.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, because of that, like, it's really easy for me to, like, even, like, I'll go to a show where this, you know, I'll do a show, and I did a show about a year ago, maybe a little more than that, in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Place holds 155. I feel like 40 something people showed up, right?
Wow.
It didn't look good.
Right.
You know, it didn't look good. And you know, I've done
worse. You said in Philly?
Yeah.
That sounds like a tough market to me off top.
It can be for sure. Mm-hmm. I've done worse in bigger places, but this night, like, I just, for some reason, and I think it's just because on the East Coast, I usually do good, but Philly, like you said, is always tough.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'm, you know, I'm doing my thing, and I'm looking, and I'm seeing it's not that many people. Like, fuck it, we're doing it, you know. But, like, after that show, dude, like, for that time, like, I broke my merchandising record that night.
Because everybody that showed up bought multiple things.
Like, it was the first time I ever really saw a merch line for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, it had only been maybe 2 years before that where I was on tour, I think, with, like, Dessa.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow.
Oh, God.
That's a merch line.
Like, I mean, the whole venue probably lines up to shake her hand.
Yeah. And I was so far away from that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, to have, and now, like, that's kind of like a consistent thing is that I have, like, a merch line. And sometimes it's really long. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot of progress. And I fill myself with pride at that because, like, that was hard fought to get there, you know? So sometimes it does feel like enough, you know, but I guess not enough to quiet the id.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But enough where, like, you have these moments where, like, damn, that's cool.
Right.
You know?
So that's the thing is like the so to go back to your question about the transition into like quote unquote normalcy, like I'll never be a normal person. I'm a fucking weirdo. Like I'm a weird.
You're creative.
I'm a weird creative motherfucker. And it took me a long time to even qualify myself as that because what you talked about earlier, like the imposter syndrome, I've always felt like that. I've always felt like I'm not really a rapper. I'm just somebody who like I'm really fucking smart and I was able to like break down rap mathematically to make sense to me and I'm really good at it now. Mm-hmm. But I'm not a natural.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't good when I was 18. I could do it when I was 15, but I wasn't good at it.
Right.
Wasn't good at it till I was 33, you know? So like that I'll never be normal, but at the same time something changed with me in the last few years where like the lack of satisfaction has become completely unsatisfying. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so, man, I've been going camping. That shit feels great. I'm trying to travel more. That shit feels great.
You're having visceral life experiences.
I'm trying to do that more. I have a girl now that's going good. Like, that feels great. Like, before it was like all my inspiration came from like being a fucking scumbag and drinking and having unsafe sex, like, or like, you know, problematic sexual experiences, like, and that just got old. Like, so I don't know. I'll be honest though, like, now that I've stopped giving as many fucks and I've unmuted all my friends on Twitter and like am happy about their accomplishments, I've been a little more inspired and I'm like starting to write again a little bit and like maybe having
some. So maybe it's a cycle.
Maybe, but. At the same time, I know that if I complete another record, I'm going to have no dreams of like that going anywhere farther than just being a record.
I mean, but also, you know, I think the music business is such a state right now where like you it's really a lot easier to see the limitations of what can happen unless you have a lot of help. You know what I mean?
To an extent, but at the same time, I'll tell you what. The last – if anything, I should have put out another record within a year after the last one.
Right.
Because
you had a thing that you would build.
Man, putting out something by ourselves, that was the most money I've ever seen from any of that shit.
Right.
And it was like this – it was like this very substantive thing where you could reach out and touch it and see it in your – and I was like, ooh, we got to capitalize on this. And we just couldn't. Like for some reason, Mark and I both went through like just a lull, you know, and that is what it is creatively. But that's the whole thing is that it also – that was kind of a moment that made me feel more satisfied too. Like, ooh, look what we did by ourselves. We should have been doing that by ourselves the whole time. But somewhere in my head also went like we peaked. Like we just peaked and it's not going to get better than this. So do I want to risk backpedaling?
I feel you, G, because like you know, people – a lot of people – man, I had people say this when, like, Dark Comedy came out, man.
Yeah.
They were like, this is the best you'll ever do. Like, I had, like, reviews would say shit like
really?
That. Like, I had this one reviewer, this dude said, like, this is the best thing he's ever done, and it's doubtful he'll, like, ever do it. You know what I mean? I'm like,
wow.
Jesus Christ. Like,
that's mean.
I mean, it's I don't know. And so, like, I always had that in my head, too. Like, you know, having to, like, compete with myself or whatever weirdness that is. And, like, I mean, what if I did peak? But then what if I did? Fuck it.
Right,
you know what
right.
I mean? Like, it's like I didn't run out of ideas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I always – I don't know. I don't – but I definitely had that thought, too. Like, oh, like maybe this was my nut, too. Like, maybe this was it, you know?
Do you think that's the one, like, when everything's said and done, is that the one people are going to remember, you think?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably, man. But even that, honestly, the fact that they remember any of them is really tight.
I'll tell you, my favorite song of yours is still Pissy Transmissions.
Hey, man, that's a good song.
I love that song.
Man, hey, that song.
You are also shit on that
song,
one.
Special place in my heart, man.
I could never be a simple brother because the world's not black and white. Some of the shit's magenta color. That is the most clever way of saying there is nuance in the world that gets lost on Twitter frequently. Like, everybody forgets about nuance. Everyone wants to blame everything on one thing, and it's like, man.
And Twitter's funny because, like, sometimes you can add the right amount of words to make something accurate even within the character limit, but you're like, this isn't as effective.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You take out words. Say, fuck it. I'll say it this way that is a little problematic, but yeah. It's going to get my motherfucking point across.
Right,
you
right.
Know?
Well, and that's a really hard platform for me because you see how wordy I am. And just when I'm trying to get a question off, like.
You're a threader, dude.
God. I have to thread. Like, I can't do it in one sentence. Like, it's crazy. Anyway. Let's talk about the record a little
bit,
because I feel like we've already – I don't know how long we've been at it, but we tend to do this.
Yeah.
We run long. My brain is not working right now. Is it the Robert – is Brick Body Kids still exist? Is that what
still
it's called?
Daydream.
Still Daydream. Yeah. Okay, sorry.
No,
it's about the Robert Taylor homes in Chicago.
It's mostly about that.
That's the
framework for it is that, yeah.
What is Brick Body Kids? Is that that was this like the colloquial term for the kids that live there?
Nope. That's like the kids who are like, you know, if you look at the cover and
yeah.
The kid, like, it's, you know, kids, it's like buildings with heads and arms. It's like the kids like become the buildings. It's just like a commentary on like the hardening of like living in a place like that and the apathy of those buildings being knocked down, being like, to me, related to the apathy that a lot of people experience when, like, black bodies get murdered. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just this haphazard erasing of memories.
Yeah. And erasure. Erasure is the big point. And how, like, when that erasure happens, people don't – like, when the buildings got erased, people don't think about the families and people that lived there, what that meant, if that was traumatizing for them or not. Like, and, like, when somebody's life gets erased by, like – police brutality, there's a lot of people in this country who cannot connect to the pain of like their family or friend. Their first thought is, what did the thug do?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and that, like, that's kind of what I'm trying to get
at. Oh, if he would have listened.
Right. That shit.
That shit. Yeah. People's lack of empathy never ceases to amaze me in this country because it's like you see – you see this on the news every day, but then it happens to like a white person and all of a sudden there's the outrage and it's just like so fucking hypocritical. But beyond that, was your aunt distraught when the buildings – like your aunt is the one that lived there, right?
Yeah, but I actually haven't talked to her in quite a few years.
Really?
But I'm pretty sure that they had moved out of there long before they got demolished.
Right.
I know her daughter, who was like my first cousin, and her immediate family who were all living there, they moved out.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't talked to my great aunt in forever.
Oh, it was your great aunt?
It was my great aunt.
So your grandmother's sister.
My grandmother's sister, yeah.
What memories do you have growing up around that building?
Man, like some of my earliest memories. My great grandmother lived there, so like all of my memories of her were there. And I remember the roaches, and I remember the carpet, and I remember these long plastic, like, walkway kind of strips of plastic that were on everything, and like there's plastic on the couches and stuff. My aunt, I'm pretty sure, was doing a lot of heroin.
Really?
When I think back on her now, like how she looked and the way she used to kind of talk, and like now I'm thinking, oh, okay. She was on some job.
Nodding off.
Yeah. And like kind of like, you know, like the swaying and the eyes half open and skinny, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she had a brother who was also a heroin addict, my uncle. He ended up dying from AIDS.
Wow.
Yeah, sharing needles and all of that.
Yeah. And then we talked in the last podcast about your mother had some drug problems as well. So all of these things, seeing it as a kid – but probably not comprehending it as a kid.
Some of it. I mean, like, I knew my uncle died from AIDS.
Yeah.
You know, like, I knew that. I would hear my mom talking about cocaine while I would go to school and hear, you know, dare, you know, drugs are bad.
Right.
Like, so some of it you could process, and some of it you couldn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Damn. How has that affected your mentality as an adult?
I mean, I've had a lot of time to think and process a lot of stuff, and I had shit happen to me that was way worse than that. Like, so, like, I think everything that I've gone through in life has pushed me towards being, like, a humanist.
Yeah.
And just really, like, trying to just respect people.
And not put the blame on somebody as an object, kind of that's not a fucking dope fiend. That's a woman with a problem.
That's a situation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know, the 80s were hard, man. A lot of people made horrible choices in the 80s, man. And you know, you were coming from the 70s who were very freewheeling and people were used to being able to try different kinds of drugs in a very casual way. But then when heroin and crack came, you couldn't just fucking dabble in that shit. It changed your life. People didn't know that. Mm-hmm. You know, it had to be a whole generation of people that turned into like crackheads and junkies before people really learned that, like, you can't fuck around with this shit. Mm-hmm. But those people happen to be like my generation's parents.
Yeah.
You know, and like those generation gaps are some shit that our families are still dealing with. Mm-hmm. Some of those people just became fucking zombies, you know?
Mm-hmm. What part of Chicago were those homes in?
South Side.
The South Side. Is that, that's where you grew up in the South?
Mm-hmm. And I grew up, my building, I didn't live in that building. I lived with my grandmother and we lived about a mile away from there.
Okay. Yeah. What's it like seeing Chicago used as an example? Like it's another, okay, like the way that when a black man is shot by police and gets used as an example by white people of like, oh, well, that's why you should listen to the police. I feel like that's how Chicago gets treated as a city as far as violence goes. And it's like it's the exact opposite of humanistic. Mm. Like it's totally boiled down to this statistic that contextually is not even accurate. So like what's it like to see the place that you grew up used as an example of like – just degradation.
Typically, I just don't listen to people that say shit like that off top. But my thoughts are that it's horrifying that the communities that I grew up in have degraded to that point. You know, like the actual reality of the murders. But I think a lot of that has to do with the destruction of the public housing system, you know, and the way that people got dispersed with no planning for shit like that. Like you had hardcore self-contained zones of like drug dealing and gang banging that you leveled and you just dispersed these people all over the South Side, all over the South suburbs with no, like there was no liaison to try to like make sure that you didn't put a genie and a vice lord
next door to each other.
Exactly. Mm. And you know, and now you look at the randomness of the violence, I really think that that's got something to do with it.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you ever go home?
Not enough.
Yeah. You got family that lives there still?
My immediate family, like my mom and my siblings, they're out in Gary, Indiana. And then my aunt and cousins, all that, they're all in the burbs.
Yeah.
So, like, not really in the city proper, but, like...
How's Gary doing? Friends.
Always awful.
Yeah.
Gary's always going to be... It's just a terrible place.
Mm-hmm.
Just not... You know, like, it's a post-industrial wasteland.
Right.
You know?
How'd they end up in Gary?
Just the rent is a lot cheaper, and there was a certain thrust based on this church that my family used to belong to that, like, at this one point, they all just started moving out there because the rent, like, you could buy houses and stuff for cheap. And, and I think there was one kind of focal point for the church that was already there.
Yeah.
And then people just started moving that direction.
Right. Are you close to your family?
I guess the answer is no.
Yeah.
I'm not – I went through some shit when I was in college, right? It's one semester in particular. My financial aid forms got filled out in some kind of fucked up way. And so I had money for tuition, but I didn't have money for housing.
Uh-huh.
So I was homeless for a semester, basically.
You living in a car? Or
I just crashed.
Couches?
Crashed, yeah. Crashed everywhere. And like it was one of the most – it was one of the hardest 6-8 months – of my life because, like, my mom had moved to Gary into a place where I didn't even have a bedroom, and my dad was out here in L.A., and me and my grandfather had a hard time where we weren't really, like, speaking, and I just really felt like I had nothing, had nobody. All I had was the kindness of my friends in that college town, some of which I had known from high school and others I had just made down there that were just letting me, like, stay at their places. Uh-huh. And like, I kind of made this conscious decision at that point that I just really wasn't going to give any energy to family at that point because when I needed some shit, they weren't there for me. When I needed some shit, like, my friends were there for me. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm choosing my friends as my family. And I kind of still am like that, but that's one of them things, like, I was telling you about earlier. It's like a childish way to handle shit that I've brought into adulthood because I actually, like, I ended up hurting a lot of people's feelings doing that too.
I've done very similar things.
Yeah.
I'm very good at just like turning a switch off and like, nope, you're not a part of my life anymore.
Right.
And I blame it on toxicity, like, oh, you're a toxic thing in my life. And then a couple years down the line, I go, well, I'm like, maybe I'm the toxic one. Like, maybe I fucked that up. Yeah. I don't know if that's the same.
Well, I mean, mine was more like, you know, rather than having any sort of like patience or even establishing a dialogue and expressing myself to these people, I was just like, fuck them all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And really turned a switch in me that was just like, no family, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I think it cost me some like humanity, you know what I mean? Even though the connection to the friends was strong, it's just like it put this kind of artificial love bond there,
right.
I was transferring from family to friendship. You know?
Your dad lives out here though, doesn't he? So moving to LA wasn't exactly like an escape from family then? Like you just
– No, it wasn't an escape from family, but like I had never really lived with my dad. So it was like, you know, we were always close, but like – we had never had that, like, I live with my dad experience.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was a new thing, you know, like moving out here and living with him for like 6 months, you know.
Yeah.
It was interesting because he's a man that enjoys his own space as well.
Right.
You know, he was a divorcee. You know, he's doing his own thing. So he was happy to have me there. But, you know, it was a one bedroom apartment and it was his space, you know.
I'm sorry if I'm like digging deep here, but like how often you get to see your dad out here?
I see him every week.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. I see him every week.
Nice. You guys are good?
Yeah, we're great.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we're great, man. We've always been really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the record. So how many different producers are on it?
Nine, I think. Because Exile did two and Illingsworth did two and then everybody else did one, so
nice.
I don't know what that math means.
When's it come out?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow is actually – it's already out now.
Oh, yeah,
if you're hearing this, it's out. Go to Spotify. Go to Apple Music. Get them these royalty streams. I mean I have tons of other stuff I could talk to you, but I feel like we've been going forever. So, you know. You're always welcome here, Mike.
Well, that's good. I want to come back.
Not that I have any control over the space. You're here all the time anyway. But I just mean you're always welcome for kind of neat clicks. Like
yeah,
I love
we should
hang out in real life more.
We should hang out in real life more.
Yeah, yeah.
I should come over here more and talk into this microphone. Like we can have like bite sized conversations.
I'll start another podcast with you. I don't give a fuck. Don't threaten me with a good time.
Actually, as there's some podcast biz I want to talk to you about too.
I'm down. I have some really good podcast ideas that I've never done. I'm not someone that can juggle as much as you juggle.
I'm not sure I can either.
You're a good juggler. Don't give yourself that credit.
Well, I'm saying in the sense that, like, on paper.
Yeah.
But, like, I've run into some problems in the last, like, few weeks.
Really?
Because I forgot how stressful it can be to put an album out. I forgot, like
– it's like, all-consuming for, like, about a month.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, like – and I'm trying to do 100 other things, like, while – and I get to this point where, like – I get an email and somebody says something slightly disappointing to me and I'm like ready to punch a wall because it's just the stress of it all. And that's like I can plan to do a bunch of things, but I don't think ahead about what it's going to feel like to actually do them.
Right.
And that's like the part that I've not had a good time with.
I'll tell you, the last time I put out a record, like the 2 months leading up to the actual release, I definitely put like some long lasting strains on relationships where like I had to have some serious conversations with people that were like upset with me because I turned off to the rest of the world. I was like, I need to tunnel vision on this to do it right.
I've definitely like been rude to some people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I'll be, you know, and in between, but see, and then right after this, I mean, album out, tour starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean?
It's a lot.
And then as soon as I get done with touring, it's like right into TV production.
Yeah.
It is a little much.
Right.
You know, and I do find myself sometimes like, ooh, I don't know if I should say yes to all of this at the same time.
Right. Are you at a place where Do you feel comfortable saying no to opportunities sometimes? Like, does sometimes going like, oh, well, I'm going to say no to this because I need this family time, or I need this, this or that or the other. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and a lot of times that stuff happens too, because people ask me to do stuff last minute all the time, and I have no trouble turning down last minute stuff.
Totally.
Like, it has to be the most awesome shit ever for me to like try to fit it in tomorrow.
Right.
Like, that's just, I don't know, it didn't even feel like respectful to me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, right. Word. All right. Well, I mean, fuck, is there anything else you want to touch on?
Nope.
Tell people where to find you online.
Go to Mike_Eagle on Twitter, @Mike_Eagle, or go to MikeEagle.net. I got a fancy website.
Yeah, follow us Twitter. There's so much whimsy.
Whimsy.
It's whimsical. Have you been back to the magical rap forest?
Yeah, I'm going again, too, man. I'm going in a couple weeks.
Fantastic.
Yeah. The miraculous rap forest.
Oh, is that what it was? Miraculous rap forest. That's right. All right, guys, that was Mike Eagle. We got into it. We always do.
We do.
It's very, very fun. It's fun, and it's also, I feel like you always get me to a point where my voice starts to raise, where you can really tell that I'm in a conversation, because I'm like, I get tension in my voice, and I'm like, you make me think about shit.
Good. Heart time.
Yeah. Most of the people that sit in that chair that are strangers, I don't want to go there with them.
Exactly. You know?
My name is Lee. You guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter @itsintuition. Follow my man behind the boards making the shit sound buttery, Bed Shim, @IamDatabase, based with two S's. Follow us as a unit @KindaNeat. YouTube.com/KindaNeat, where we just broke 100,000 subscribers. So thank you guys for that. It was a long time coming, but you made it happen. Other than that, everything wrapped up in a pretty package at KindaNeat.net. Go to Patreon.com/KindaNeat and kick in a couple bucks. That's it. Thank you guys. That was Mike. I'm Lee, and this was KindaNeat.